Good day, Erev Shabbos. Thank you for coming out a second time. We're learning tomorrow's daf, Shabbos daf. Shabbos daf is Ksuvos daf Pei. Ksuvos daf Pei. We left off at the Mishnah, the first Mishnah on Ayin Tes Amud Beis. There's two Mishnahs there, a little past the midway point of the Amud. Let's pick up from the first Mishnah. Nafla Avadim Shvachas Zakenim. Again, we've been focusing on the topic, the idea of Nichsei Melug, and it relates to, obviously, things she inherits during the marriage. Those are nichsei melug in the sense that the husband gets to use the peiros, she gets to keep the karen, the base, and the husband gets the peiros. Says the Mishnah, what happens if it falls to her during the marriage? Avadim, shvaches, maidservants or slaves, zakenim, that are old. And they're old, they're depreciating assets, so you may want to sell them for something that, by karka, that could be more enduring. Says the Tanakhama of the Mishnah, you're right, yimachru, they should be sold, v'yikach b'me karka, and use the funds to buy karka, which, again, she'll own the karka, and hu eichel peiros, and the husband will eat the peiros. Says the Mishnah further, however, Rav Shimon Gamliel Eimer, Leisimker. He argues, and this idea we touched on earlier in the Amud, we didn't focus that much time on it, we touched on earlier, Leimker, why? Leisimker, Meshein, Shvach, Pesavia. There's a concept called Shvach, Pesavia, meaning, for lack of a better word, we touched this morning, we called it like sentimental value. There's a concept of things that were part of the family, part of the family's, assets over all the years, and just keeping it, even if it may make more sense overall financially for the long term to sell it. If the wife wants to keep it because it's something that is the pride of her father's house, that's something she wants to keep. She has a right to tie into that, and they would keep the avadim and the shvachas even as they slow down and depreciate in value. Still, she has a right to force that issue. What if trees, olive trees, or grapevines that were old, that they fell down again to her in Yerusha, Yemachru, they should be sold. Vikav on karka and buy fresh karka. Voichel peiros, she owns the karka and he will own the, he will get the peiros like regular nechsei melug. Rabbi Daimer, same idea as what Shagumil said by the avadim. Same story, that if there's a vineyard that belonged to the family for many years, or a olive garden that belonged to the family for many years, yes, it's something which may be depreciating. It's old, and maybe it's funny, interesting. I didn't know that vines, vineyards, or olive gardens they get dated and they get too old. But okay, but apparently it's such a concept. So says the Mishnah. Rabbi says late tamacher that she doesn't have to sell them. Now, just to be clear, even both according to Shagumil by the case of avadim that are old, and according to Rabbi Huda, by the case of the trees that are old, it doesn't mean that you're not allowed to. It's only if she is objecting and she's saying, I don't want to sell it. This is the Shvach Beisavia. This is a part of her family. I want to keep it. So she could tell him, you can't sell it, even though there's something that may be more fruitful in the long term. You may get more payrus out of just selling it and buying new karka and working new karka. I'm not interested in selling it. This is the pride of the family, and therefore you have to work with the payrus of what these are going to produce, these old trees or these old avadim. And if it's maybe less payrus, that's what it is. But that's only if she's objecting, of course. If she's willing, then it wouldn't be a problem to sell. Says the Gemara. Talking about the trees, the machlek is only when it fell in, the trees were part of her own field. So she inherited trees together with her own field. It's part of the overall possession of the field that belongs to her. So the idea is over there, even if the trees are headed towards dying, these trees are going to die. I guess that the concept applies to any tree eventually can die. These trees are eventually going to die. You're still on the field. So we're going to view it as if the field is like the Karen and the trees could also be part of the payrus, and therefore he could say, even if he wants to sell, she could say no. Aval basada shenishla, if mamish only owned the trees itself and they don't even own the field, so when the trees die, you're left with nothing. You're left with the wood, you're left with nothing. Says the Gemara, divrei kol temkara. So Rav said over there, everyone who can sell mashim the kal yakarna. Back to the idea we had earlier in the daf, that's called kal yakarna. The karen's getting used up. The idea, of course, always is that the payrus are considered payrus as long as the karen remains. So whatever is produced outside is called the payrus. But if over here the karen itself is getting used up, the husband has a legitimate taina that I don't want the payrus to get the karen to get used up, and he could force a sale. Maskor of Yasef, Hari Avadim Shvachas. Let's think about the first case of the Mishnah. Avadim Shvachas, which obviously Avadim Shvachas are like the trees in someone else's field, meaning when they're gone, they're gone. The Chisad Hashenish the Shaladami. Upligi, and yet we still machlekes Tanakam Rav Shigomil in that in a parallel case. So isn't that a raya that by trees as well the same thing? Eliyit Ma'achit Rav Shalimur says, you're right. If you're going to say a member from Rav, say as follows. Amrav Kano Rav. Machlekes Besad Hashenish Shalah. Go the other way. The machlekes is dafka when the field isn't hers. That's where there's machlekes Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda, whether or not she could force the husband could force a sale against her will or not. But when it comes to a sada shalah, where you're always going to have the field anyway, even the Tanakam would agree to Rabbi Yehuda that the husband cannot force a sale. Ava basad the shala, tivra kol loisim gemesh shvach v'sabia. Even who gives over there, you don't sell because shvach v'sabia the trees, and even if the trees ultimately will die and have no more value, the field itself has value, and that's not considered being mechala, using up the keren. Okay, so like the Mishnah Vayter. Now, the way it works is, by nechzei melug, of course, the husband is, let's say, in a classic case, working the field, investing in the field, plowing, planting, trying to make improvements to the field that should produce better pears. He eats the pears while they're married, and she maintains ownership of the field. What happens when the marriage is over? Let's say they get divorced. Chalila, let's say they get divorced. So now the field goes back to the wife. The question is, what happens to the investments the husband made in his time while he was trying to get pears out of the karka? What happens to those investments in the event of a divorce? Hamaitzi, if she dies, he inherits it anyway. But if he dies, then it goes back to her. I guess a similar question could be, what rights do the kids have on the money? But the simple case, Rashi says, we're talking about a simple case where they got divorced. So the shaila is, what type of claim could the husband have on his investment? The husband spends money on the Maluk property. He spends money investing it. Let's say he spent a lot of money, and he only had a little bit. The amount of money he put in didn't correspond, wasn't a good investment compared to what he took out. Or the opposite. He put in a little bit of effort, and he made a lot of money. Either way, what was spent was spent. What he spent. What he ate, that's the deal. The deal is that he has rights to the payers. Whatever he invests is part of his obligation to, or his opportunity. It's an obligation, opportunity, all the same. And whatever spent was spent, he doesn't get anything back. Unless, says the Mishnah, unless he spends money and he never got back for that money. If he spent money and didn't get anything to eat out of it, if he spent $1,000 and he got a little bit to eat out of it, that was a bad investment, but they're even. If he spent money and he didn't get anything, then we say, Yishavakam Haitzi Vietil. He swears how much he spent and he's able to claim that money back. Before you see the Gemara, Taisvis, actually, Taisvis is for some reason put on Payam and Aleph. Taisvis Payam Aleph is the third Taisvis on Payam and Aleph. It's just in the wrong place. It really should be on a Mishnah. Taisvis asks a basic question. We have a concept in, more comes up, of course, more in some Masechta Shavuos, but comes up also, presumably, more above Metzia. There's a concept of a person being Nishpa Venaitel. And that's the unique case. Typically, a person swears to keep what he has. A person's made a mitzvah, a person, there's a claim against him, and he wants to defend himself, so he swears to keep what he has. Swearing to collect, swearing, making a shvua, and then collecting based on the shvua is considered a more unique case. And we call that nishpa v'neitel, swearing and collecting. And there's a Mishnah that lists all the cases of nishpa v'neitel. Ask Taisus, why is this case not included? We're saying the husband has to swear how much he spent, and then once he swears, if it's talking about a case where he didn't get reap any benefits, he gets to collect the itzas, he gets to collect the cost, you deduct from whatever he pays back to the wife, the cost of what he spent. That's a nishpa v'neitel. Why was not listed in, why is our Mishnah's case not listed in the Mishnah in the cases of the whole list of Nishpa v'Neitel, Azai Frekt Taisvis? Answers Taisvis that the only time we're saying that there's the list of Nishpa v'Neitel is by cases where there's actual dispute. There's two sides arguing over whether certain monies was owed or not, and the chiddush is that you're going to allow one of the parties to swear and collect. That's nishpa v'neitel. There's no argument over here. She's not denying. She doesn't know what he spent. The wife typically has no idea exactly what doesn't spend in the field. What is it? Sales for how much he spent on workers, how much he spent on materials. She doesn't know what he spent. So he's really just swearing just so we know that the number he's giving is true. We want to make sure, we want to protect the wife's interest and make sure we know the number's true. So nishpa v'neitel is really a category when there's a dispute and you swear and you win, so to speak, to collect by Day the Shavua. That's that unique category. That's the list of the cases of the Mishnah, in the Mishnah of the Anshavuos of Nishpa v'Neitel. But our Mishnah, our case doesn't fit into that list because the wife isn't necessarily arguing. He's not saying that, oh, you spent less than what you're saying. The wife has no idea. He's just swearing so we can know that it's an honest number. And Day says, I'll bring another case that's the same. That's also not in the Mishnah. The halacha is, we had it recently, if a person dies and he has creditors, so when the creditors come to collect from the Yisayimim, the halacha is ain't from Nichse Yisayimim, Ella, with the Shavua, you have to swear before you collect from the Yisayimim. That should also be in the list. Nishpa v'Neitel, Teretz, the Yisayimim aren't arguing. The Taisa says the same svar is going to apply over there. The Yisayimim aren't arguing that the money is not owed. They have no idea. They don't know. They're not saying yes. They're not saying no. They don't know. And therefore, the fellow swears just so we know he's not taking advantage of the Yisayimim and collects. That doesn't make the list of Nishpa v'Neitel because there was no dispute over there. And therefore, it wouldn't be part of that list, just like our Mishnah is not on the list. Okay. Says the Gemara back on the bottom of Ayin, that's the Tesis, by the third Tesis on Payam Nalf. Says the Gemara back on the bottom of Ayin Tesis on the base. The Kamakima, we say if he eats a little bit, he's already given, he lost his rights to collect back any of the Hitzas, any of his expenses. What's called Kima? What's called he ate a little bit? How much is a little bit? Even if he eats one dried fig, one single dried fig, it's tiny, a tiny amount. One single dried fig is enough to say he benefited, he again, it was a, it may be a very disproportional amount that he spent compared to what he ate, but he benefited, and he could no longer demand back any money. Says the Gemara, one caveat, for who sha'achol derech kavod. He has to eat it in a derech kavod. First, we'll explain, what does derech kavod mean? It means not as like a snack. It wasn't derech arai. Rather, he sat at a table, tasted the Tamid Ben Yair, and explained that it means like sitting at a table. He sits at a table, eats like a mensch, eats it in a bakav, take away. That's considered an achila. But if he taka ate it while he's running, that's not considered an achila. One thing's an achila. Gemara later will address. And let's say he ate it not derech kavod. At some point, let's say he ate it like a, I don't say like an animal, but let's say he ate a ton. He confessed a ton, but he didn't eat it derech kavod. Are you going to say he still gets to collect? The Gemara's going to discuss how much that, even if it's not pateras achila, once he had enough of a benefit, he also cannot go back and collect. We'll see that very shortly. Says Gemara, another definition, another taich, another shear, I should say, of what's called achol kema. Amar, top of Payam and Aleph, from Abba Bey Rav, Afilu Shigra de Tamri. From Abba Rav says, you know what the shear is? Even a Shigra de Tamri, which is even like a cake of pressed dates. Even if he ate a cake or a piece of the cake of pressed dates, that's enough to be considered that he no longer can demand back his expenses. Even though he had such a little benefit, he can't demand back the expenses. Now, there's a very interesting Rashi here. This Rashi is interesting for two reasons. Start Rashi. First of all, Rashi is interesting because Rashi is like a tasteless here where he asks a kasha and a teretz. He brings a kasha and a teretz. But more than that, Rashi brings another pshat that others want to say to answer this question, and he dismisses it. He says it's a shtus, literally. Let's see. Let's read the Rashi inside. Let's skip to the third line of Rashi. The kashali. Rashi is a kasha. So he said, the pshat is, what's the amount? A small amount of these pressed figs. Pressed dates. Ask Rashi a question. Mayafilu to Rab Abba. Rab Abba is coming to say a new pshat over the first pshat. The first pshat we had was, what's the shear? Rav Asi said, the shear is eating a fig. And Rav Abba comes along and says, no, even eating a date, dates are more expensive. Vikashli, Mayafilu to Rab Abba, HaGregoris Graham and Tamarim. We know that Gregoris are worse than Tamarim. Why? Because now we learned in the Mishnah. This Mishnah is in Ervin, Daf Chavtes. This Mishnah Ervin, Daf Chavtes. We had it recently. I'm drawing a blank now if it was in Ksuvus or in Iris and Pesachim, but we had this recently in the Gemara. It was quoted, this Mishnah. Kedan Acha Gregris Veshilim Tamarim. If a person ate Gregris and he paid back Tamarim, I think it was over there. I'm pretty sure it was actually in Pesachim, but it was a question of paying back volume or value. Is it a problem? So we discuss over there, Tavlav Bracha, that the person should get a Bracha for paying back because the value of Tamarim is greater than the value of Gregris. So we replace the same amount of food, and he replaced it in a better, in a more expensive species, and therefore, tavla bracha. But the point is very clear that tomorrow worth more. So what's afilu? You're saying afilu, even one date. Yeah, but one date is worth more than one fig. So this makes sense, afilu. So it says Rashi Sibleitza. He's not saying this is actually the case, but he's saying if the girs was opposite, v'yave garsina la, Rav Abba Bereisha, Mekame Darasi, Levikasha. If the order was flipped, it would be great. Rav Abba says, what's the share of eating a little bit, even one date? Even a date from a pressed fig cake. And comes along with Asi and says, no, not even a date, even a fig. And a fig stock worth less. So that would be a geshmak instead for the Gemara if it was opposite. That's not the gears that we have, but that would be nice. That's how Rashi leaves what he, seemingly, his suggestion of perhaps how the Gemara should have been. But then look what Rashi brings. There are some, it wouldn't be shver if the order was flipped. Yesh farm shabashim, but there's farm that make a mistake. The kusbam, and they say, you know what the answer to the question is? Kama harbe. The question was, we've said, how much is a little? A little is a little. What's we said, whether the husband ate a little or a lot, it doesn't make a difference. Either way, his expenses cannot be reclaimed because he had benefit. So what's a little? A little staka, a fig. And what's a lot? We're saying a lot would be a date. Even a date would be called a lot. So that would be, at the face of it, ice terrets. We're saying the smallest amount of what would be called a lot is a date. That's how someone explained to fit the lashon of afilu in Rav Abba, even though he's saying a more expensive thing because he's going on the harbe. Says Rashi, the girsa shaitim me. That's a girsa shaitim. So why? Why is it girsa shaitim? Because kama harbe lamai hilchasa. Think about it. The halacha of the Mishnah was, as long as the husband ate a little, he can't claim back the expenses. Certainly if he ate a lot, he can't claim back expenses. Why would the Gemara even contemplate what's called a lot? There's zero nafkamina. Once you're out of the realm of a little, once you got the minimum shear, the husband can't claim expenses. All you need to know. There's no reason to even spend a moment trying to figure out what would constitute harbe for these purposes, this Mishnah's purposes. It makes no difference. And therefore, it's a girsa shaita to try to answer akasha that yelashin afilu is no good. And instead, you're making a bigger problem because you're explaining that the Gemara is coming to address what the harbe means. Harbe is something we didn't have to address in the first place. So Rashi calls that a girsa shaita. Okay. Says the more further. What about a cake of dates that were squeezed out? Meaning, if days that were squeezed out already, is that enough? Or that's already not enough? That's not chashuv enough to be considered an achila. Take it, we leave that unresolved. Okay, ask the Gemara, we pointed out before, that's all we said. If you eat it derech kavod, a small amount, but eaten like a mensch at a table, that's considered enough that he benefited, and he could no longer claim any of the expenses. Leichel derech kavod, what if it wasn't eaten derech kavod? My, what's going to be this year? Amaru l'pliga b'chei amara b'marava, in Eretz Yisrael, this two Amram argued, chanam b'kisr v'chanam b'kadiner. One said, the shear is the amount of an isser. And one said, it's a bigger shear, the amount of a diner. One said, the amount of an isser. One said, the amount of a diner. The Gemara does not bring a psak, which one it is. So it's interesting, the Rambam brings that the shear is the kediner. The Rambam says that in order for the husband not to have a right to be tovei his expenses, and if he only ate it derech arai, he only ate it not in a bakavtik manner, he has to have eaten, benefited a diner's worth in order to not be able to collect that because it says, why does Rambam say diner? It's the Beis Yosef, I believe the Beis Yosef, I don't think it's in Kesher Mishnah, I think it's in the Beis Yosef himself. He explains, because Rambam is viewing the husband as the muchzik. There's a big yisod over here. Over here, it's a complicated scenario. Typically, there's a muchzik and there's a maitzi. The husband is trying to claim back the expenses. But the truth is, Kozman, they're married. He is the kind of the muchzik on the field. He's working the field. And they're really both married. So who do you call the muchzik? So says Beis Yosef, Rambam is apparently viewing the husband as a muchzik on those haitzahs on the field. And he only has to give back minus those haitzahs unless he eats a diner. And the reason why we pick diner over Isser, because we're not sure, Gemara doesn't give up sak, and therefore we pick the greater share, because you have to be makel, when you want to take away money from the muchzik, you have to be makel on that muchzik, we'll be makel to take the share of a diner. That's what the Beis Yosef explains in the Rambam. Amri dayin de Pabadisa. The judges of Pabadisa said as follows. Amri Rabbi Yehuda b'chavilas maris. Rabbi Yehuda said that when a husband fed these chavilas maris, he fed it to his animals, obviously. These maris are the branches of the grapevines. He fed it to his animals, and then he got divorced. That's considered as if he had ana, and therefore, he no longer could make a claim on the expenses he put into the field, even if he didn't eat any payers himself. That's already enough of ana that he cannot claim. And there's a big discussion in the Mefarshim, actually. What is the chavilas maris? What does it constitute? Is it because it's the achila of behema? It's called an achila of kavod, and we don't care what the amount is? Or no, we're talking about an achila of zmiris that totaled the value of a diner or of a isser. The chiddush is, even though it wasn't eaten by a person, it's just for his animals, that's still good enough, but avad, it's got to be that shear of mammon, the shear of diner kisser. That is a discussion of the reversion, but the bottom line is, the chiddush is that the chavilas myris, which is being eaten by the animal, is enough to be considered a benefit from the field, and he got the payrus, and therefore he has no rights to demand, even if he spent much more in Aitzaz, he can't demand it back. Ridul Tamei, and the Mar makes a connection to Yehuda, seemingly a wild connection. Damar Yehuda, Rida says elsewhere, this is one psak that Yehuda was avad, the gabe nichse malug, that the husband cannot claim back his expenses because he fed his animal chavilas myris. And here's another psak related to chavilas myris. What's that? Achla ar l'shvius klayim. Let's say legabe chazak, we know it takes 3 years for a person to be a muchzik on a field. And the question is, what if one of the years, you know what he ate on the field? What was his chazaka? He ate peiros of arla, peiros of shvius, a klayim. So, you know, two of those three, arla and shvius, arla and klayim, I should say, are asabana. So it's not like the homeowner was able to benefit. It's like he stole from the homeowner. Homeowner, anyway, didn't have a usage for that. And by shvius, of course, it's hefkalakol. So you would think that those achilos wouldn't be considered good for chazaka. The answer is, the alchis says, Rabbi Yehuda, raise a chazaka. It's all considered a chazaka. So we're stalling too, just like over there, he says the chazaka, so to hear chavilas maris is good. Ask the Mefarshim, what on earth? What's the connection? Just because chavilas maris feeding the animal is good, so too, if it connects with the shita, that eating erla, eating shvius, then eating klayim is considered a chazaka. What's the connection? So Rashi seems to explain that all three are examples that we started saying a minute ago, where he's not really being nena for the Baal Bayis. The three examples over here of Chazak, not Minena, because again, Baal Bayis had no usage for the Arla, he had no usage to claim, those are both Usser, for the Baal Bayis to benefit anyway, and the Shvius was Hefko HaKol anyway. So it's not like he benefited from the Baal Bayis, yet we say that since he had an eating, and he himself did benefit, he wasn't supposed to, Asbana, but he benefited, therefore it's considered good for Chazakah. So too by Chavile's Myris. By Chavile's Myris, oh sorry, I missed the last step. So, therefore, says Rashi, that it cannot be that you're giving him a chazaka based on the anah that he had from the arla, the klayim, or the shvius, because that's not anah that he's taking from the baal bayis. That's not enough anah. It must be that you know what he also did? In addition to eating arla, klayim, and shvius, what it really means is, he was feeding the chavilas myris to his animal. And that, there is no din arla. There's no isser arla, no isser shvius, no isser of, no din of shvius, no din of klayim, on something which is not edible, it's not normal food anyway. So over there, it must be showing that an achila of the animal is myris, is like he himself ate it, and therefore, just like it's a chazaka for shalashanim, so too by us, let's say, enough of a benefit that it takes away his rights. So essentially what we're saying is, it's not the eating himself, it's we're saying because the eating himself of Erla, Klayim, and Shvias is not enough, it must be the Chavili's Myris of Erla, Klayim, and Shvias. And we see that Chavili's Myris of the animal is enough. That's how that Rashi learns. Rambam learns that no, even though it's Avera, the way we started explaining before, even though it's Avera, you do get a Chazaka, and they explain in the Rambam, the point is that the connection to our case is that just like something which is Asabahana, if he somehow benefited, that's considered enough. So too over here, if his animal benefits, even though it's an animal for human, that's enough to say he no longer gets the next similar profit. So the way we started to explain Rashi is the way they explain, sorry, in the Rambam. Okay. Says the Gemara further. Amar Yaakov, Amar Chizda. How many tzitzos nechseish tiktana? What if a person spends money on the nechseimelug for his wife who's a ketana? Let's think for a second. We're not talking about ketana the father married her off, because then she's like any other wife. She's a marriage deraisa. We're talking over here about a ketana that was Yisema. So her brother and mother married her off. Or she was married off once by the father. She got divorced. After full marriage, the father now has no rights of her. Even if the father marries her off now, it's also considered, it's called Yisema Chayavia. She's like Yisema in her father's life in the sense that that second marriage is Drabbanan. So he's in a marriage Drabbanan. He spent money. The lach is kemaitzi anachsi achadami. It's as if he spent money on someone else's property. Meaning, over there, he's able to demand compensation. The lach is, if I go, if I'm Yerul Sechveri, and I spend money, I'm able to demand the lesser of my hetzas or the value I created. I'm able to demand back some of that benefit. So over here too, he has that status because my taima of the rabbanit takanta kiyechlan is misdu. The Gemara says, why do we make it that way? Why should we make it like any other marriage? Yeah, it's a marriage rabbanan, but treat it like a regular marriage. The Gemara says, because in a way we're doing this for the protection of the wife. Why? If he's not going to be able to benefit what he puts in, he's not going to treat the field properly. He's not going to tend to it. He's not going to spend the money that it takes to treat the field properly because he's scared that if anything happens to the marriage, he gets nothing out of it. And therefore, you know, in order to protect actually her interests, we protect his interests as well by letting him have a right like anyone else who goes to stay chaveri and be able to collect at least that much. Hey, it's a story time. There was a woman, Danafla Abramei Azuzi Bechuzai, that she felt her 400 zuz as a Yerusha in Beit Chazoi. Ozlagav, her husband went, Apek Shismea Icy Arbamea. So in a bad deal, he went traveling, they're far away, and maybe they knew how much where the Yerusha was. They heard there's a nice Yerusha, so he traveled to go get it. You know what the traveling expenses were? His tickets back and forth, and his traveling expenses was 600 zuz. So he spent 600 zuz going to claim 400 zuz. Bad deal, obviously, right? Ozlagav, Apek Shismea Icy Arba. He spent 600 zuz in trying to bring me the 400 zuz, but how did you cost it? On the way home, it's the Chazuzza. On the way home, he was traveling, and he needed one more zuz for his traveling expenses. Now here he made a big boo-boo. He took from the 400, he took one zuz. Now what did we say? No matter what he expensed, if he benefited from it, can't claim back his expenses. If he didn't, then he can claim back his expenses. So till now, he would have at least gotten all 400 zuz back. He would have recouped some of his money. Now, says the Gemara, Askam and Ravami came from Thami. Amalei Ravami said, what he spent, he spent. And what he ate, and therefore he gets nothing. He gets no more compensation. Amir Abundler Vami, Hani Milhechtokacha Peri. That's when he pays. The idea is when he spent money, Haitzaz, in order to produce Peris, and he eats some Peris, so you got some Peris back for your Haitzaz. That's the deal. You can't collect, you can't go back in anymore. Over here, he didn't eat the Peris. He ate the actual Karen. Hakarnachel. He ate against the principal, not the prophets, because he needed money for his trip. Says the Gemara, Vaitzahi, and Adaraba. On the contrary, this is part of his Eitzahs. It's part of a travel expense. Maybe he's going to have to pay it back, but it's part of his travel expense. So how could they consider that as if he had some of the payers, which would cause him to lose all the money? So Mamish, a complete about face. And Kain Rami says, if that was the case, then he's indeed a person that spent money and didn't eat. Yeshava Kam Haitzi, so he's to swear that he spent 600 now and one Zuz. He's got to swear he spent that amount of money. Vigito, and he could take back compensation. Al-Khari can't take back more than the money that was there, but he can at least take back what he... at least what was there to cover his expenses. Yeshava, we send the mission, Yeshava Kam Haitzi Vigito, we send the mission, he swears how much he spent, and he collects. Amravasi, Fushie Ish Shvach Keneged Eitza. The case is, where there is enough Shvach Keneged expenses, meaning, really was the case we just addressed 10 seconds ago. You're not going to spend, she doesn't have to take out of her pocket to pay. If he spent way too much money, then the husband's allowed to take back from the payers, keneged the shvach, even though he didn't get it yet, he could take back keneged the shvach, keneged the haitzaz, I should say, but as long as he created value to that amount. But if there isn't any value for that amount, then he can't take. But the Gemara is going to have a question, actually. The Gemara is going to say, not so fast. What does it mean over here? L'may hilchasa. What does it mean when we say that it has to be enough shvach keneged haitzah? There's two ways to interpret this. Actually, it can go in two directions. One's a cool on the husband, and one's a chumrah. The best way to actually explain this is to jump into Rashi himself. L'may hilchasa, let's read it inside. L'may hilchasa kamar, v'hu shehaya shvach keneged yitzia. You're telling me that Ravasi is qualifying the Mishnah and saying that this that the husband swears how much he spent and he's able to collect is only if there's enough shvach corresponding the yitziah, corresponding his itzaz. Is it lakulele? Was Ravasi coming to be makel on the husband? Tiyik shvach tvei loy bay shvu. What Ravasi is coming to say was only when there's just an equal amount of shvach to the itzaz, when it's equal, he's got to swear before he collects. But let's say the shvach was $20,000, and he's claiming his itzaz is only $10,000. Well, what does she care? She just came out $10,000 ahead. She's still much better off, and therefore the husband won't have to swear. So if Asi is coming to be makel, not the way I was being mashed when I explained it, but rather if Asi, according to this interpretation, would be makel on the husband to say, well, as long as the shvach is greater than the itzaz, he doesn't even have to swear. Or the way we said it, that's the flip side. Or according to Machmer the Meimer, to say yitzir yisera lay shakel el kashir. All we mean to say is that if the yitzias are greater than the shvach, the husband cannot take more than the shvach. He's limited by the shir shvach. I mean, even if he swears, he can't take more than the shir shvach. But Avadi still has to swear, right? So that was the simple way that we were reading it, was that only he can only take up to that amount of shvach, but Avadi still has to swear, but not to give a leniency that once the shvach is more, he does have to swear, or no? Maybe that's coming to be a leniency. Says the Gemara, Mayachza Amrabai, Shemhaya, Shvach, Yeselaitza, Neitosaitza, Bleishvu. Abai Taka says, the more lenient approach. Abai says, if the shvach was greater than Neitza, he need not swear anymore. Amay Rabba says, but think about what you're setting up. This husband's gonna be a smart guy. He can go and claim more and have to swear, or he can just claim a penny less than the shvach, and he won't have to swear. What's he gonna do? He'll just claim a little bit less than the shvach. Amalei Rava, in Cain, as the rume, you're causing every husband to be ma'arim and say, actually, it'll be more than that. It'll be even better. Let's say the husband spent way less than the shvach. As long as he's claiming he spent a drop less, he still collects out of shvua. So let's say, Taka, go back to the example we gave before. The value went up by $20,000 because of the improvements that he did. He only spent 10. He'll claim he spent 18. 19,500, and he won't have to swear because he's still less than the 20,000. Does that make sense? Says Elam Rava. Therefore, Rava argues, and Rava says Ravasi meant the other way. Then ain la elohitza shir shvach ubishvua. Avad, the husband always has to swear. We're not getting rid of that shvua, and we're also limiting. Even with the shvua, he can always collect hitzas up to the value of the shvach. He can't collect over and above the value of the shvach. Okay, ibayelu shaila. Let's say instead of the husband working the field himself, he hired a reason. He hired the sharecroppers to work the field. And then what happened was he got divorced. Our case of our Mishnah. So they put a lot of expenses. Now, Aris, let's not forget what Aris does. An Aris is a sharecropper. He works the field. He goes through the whole season. And he takes a portion of the profits. He works like on consignment. He takes a portion of the profits. So let's just say that Aris works for 30% of the profits. So he needs to wait for the profits to get 30%. In this case, they got divorced before the Aris got a chance to collect the profits. So the husband, in this case, would lose his, let's say the husband benefit a little bit. So the husband loses his itzaz. So the question is, what happens to Arisim? Are they messed over? Do they not get to collect? Or do they get a different din because they're not the husband? Says the Gemara, Baal Shari Arisim Dachtav Mahu. Adai to the Baal Nach is, Istalk Labaal, Istalk Luhu. They came into work, Adai to the Baal, and the Baal was kind of thrown off the site. The Baal's gone from this deal. The Baal ended up losing out. And therefore, it's really not the Baal. He didn't do the work. The Aris, by extension, loses out because of the Baal had a raw deal. They went to work the field. And the land is meant to be tended to by Arisa, by sharecropper. So even though the Baal's out of the picture, they continue to do their thing. And when the field produces, they'll get the 30, they'll get their percentage. Whatever the case we gave was 30%. They'll get their 30% at the end when the field ultimately produces. That's the Shaila. Says Gemara, Maskifla Rava Bar Rav Chanan. Maishna Mayod Sech Sech Aver. Why is it any different than a person who goes into the friend of his field, the field of his friend, Unatashle Rishus, and he plants with our Rishus, that we say, Shamalei, we make an evaluation about the improvements, via Datachtaina, and he gets the lesser of. He gets paid for either the expenses or the profit, the lesser of, whichever one it is, he gets the lesser of. So here too, the sharecroppers should at least get that. They should be reimbursed at least for that. Says the Gemara, Hasam like a Shatarach, because over there was no one else to do the labor. Over there, the field was laying fallow. No one was dealing with it. So over there we say that the guy went down to Yosef Shechaver, it's no skin off the back of the Chaver, and you have to pay, you have to at least compensate him the lesser of his expenses or of the Shvach. Whereas Hachik, about the Tarach, there was a husband. The husband's job was to tend to the field. It was his job. If the sharecropper didn't do it, he would do it. And therefore, you can't, it's not an equivalent comparison to Yerushalayim Sechaveri. My Havilah, the Maisa, what's the bottom line with these Arisim? Amar Vunabay Devshua, Chazina, we look as follows. E Baal Arisum, if the Baal himself is a sharecropper, it means if the Baal himself is someone that is able to deal with the farming and tend to the field, that's what Rashi explains. It means not that he's mamash a sharecropper. If he's someone that has skills, agricultural skills, so he can tend to the field, then then the deal is, the assumption would have been on the wife's part that he's going to be the one taking care of the field, the husband. Husband chose to outsource it, to sub it out. Okay, the subs are taking that risk with the husband. And therefore, if he's gone, they're gone. But if the Baal himself not Aris, so it was understood the Baal was never going to roll up his sleeves, put on the overalls, and tend to the field himself. That wasn't happening. The land was always destined to be tended to by the Arisan, by the sharecroppers, and therefore the sharecroppers would stand to collect. If you jump into Tosfos, different Masechta, the bottom of Tosfos, Istalik, Tosfos is bothered by a question that the halacha is. We're saying now that if the husband is someone that can tend to the field himself, so then the sharecroppers lose out because the wife's assumption was he was going to tend to it. The husband's deal is that once he got a drop of benefit, he can no longer collect for the Yitzhaz, and therefore the sharecroppers won't be able to get back the Yitzhaz. As Tosfos, this should be no worse than the Gemara in Asecher Sapailim in Bav Metzia, where the Gemara says over there that if Reuven goes over to the field and he says to Shimon, work this field and I'll take care of you, I'll pay you. And it's not Reuven's field. Reuven showed some random person's field, told Shimon, go work for it, I'll pay for you. Halacha is, Reuven has to pay. Shimon's allowed to demand payment from Reuven, from Reuven himself. The halacha is, says the third line, Reuven has to pay full payment to Shimon. So our case is the same. Sharecroppers are working what they thought was Reuven's field, so to speak. It really ends up being Reuven's wife. They end up divorcing and they get separated, and therefore it's no longer in Reuven's possession at all. So Reuven should still have to pay the sharecropper. Yeah, the wife, the estate maybe doesn't have to pay. The wife doesn't have to pay, but Reuven should have to pay. What's the difference over here? Says Tosfos, because over here, the Arisim knew the deal. We have to be talking about Enochlami. Tosfos' answer essentially is, if the Arisim mamish didn't know the deal, they didn't know that they're working for a husband who only has a status, nechsim lug, then they would have a claim against the husband that the husband should put money out of his pocket and pay them. But over here, the Arisim themselves knew they're working for a husband who only has kind of like a usage rights, calls money, he's married in this field, so they knew they're taking on this risk. So they know the karka most of the wife. They went into the deal, maybe they negotiated a 50% sharecropping agreement instead of 30%, but they knew it was such a situation where they're taking on risk, and unfortunately the husband got divorced, and therefore they lose out. But if they were unaware, then they'd be able to claim just like that Gemara in Bav Metzia. Okay, says Gemara further. Iboilu, next Shaila. Baal Shemach Karka LePeiris Bahu. What if the husband went and he sold the Karka for the Peiris? So he said he got these fields in the marriage. He's not a guy that deals in agriculture. He decided he wants to just get a lump sum, get a lot of money up front. He'll sell the futures. Obviously, it's totally in whoever's buying it is betting on a lengthy, successful marriage. And so he sells the rights to the Peiris. The Shaila is, what's the halacha? Mi armina mai dekani akni? Do we say whatever he acquired, he's able to sell, and such a sale is valid? Idilma ki takin rabbanim peiris lebal. Why did rabbanim say that the baal gets these peiris throughout the marriage? Mishum revach beisa. Jump into Rashi on a beis. We just turned the page on top of a beis. Sheyachnas a peiris lebeisai. V'imazin abayis matzi v'yetivla. The idea of the baal getting the peiris is not the baal keeping it for himself and lining his own pockets. They're married. Husband wife are married, so the baal gets peiris. That's peiris for the wife too. We want the baal to be incentivized to make peiris, which will be great for the family at large. He's going to go sell. He's going to sell now all the rights to the field and the future rights to peiris. That's not in the spirit of the takana. And the Rush speaks out. What about selling the peiris for 1 year? Ask the Rush. We're discussing the baal sold the rights of the field. He sold the rights of the field for the payers. We make like a lump of the case. He sold the rights of the field for the payers, calls him on the married. Say more simple. Any given year, he gets a bunch of payers because the Baal's selling the payers. Because the Baal sell the payers. Do we say, Avada, he's allowed to sell, he owns it, therefore he can sell it? Or do we say, since the whole point is to have payers around, he can't sell payers. In any given year, he can't even sell a basket of payers because the idea is to have payers around. Says the Rush, that wouldn't be a question. Of course he can sell payers. Because if he sells payers in any given year, in exchange for the payers, what does he get? Money. Or something else. That's also called Revach Besa. Whatever he gets is also Revach Besa. The issue over here is Dafka because he's selling it all at once. So he's getting a lump sum right now for all the futures, and it's not going to create a consistent Revach Besa. It's not going to create a consistent revenue stream. Unbelievable. The Rosh is learning the whole Shaila is whether or not the husband has a right. Is it going against the spirit of the Chametz Takana by taking all the money up front or not? That's really the Shaila. But getting the money on an annual basis, that'd be fine. Who cares if it's payers? Who cares if it's money? The bias is getting the benefit. That wouldn't be an issue. The Rush learns the issue is not because he's selling it all at once. That is the question. Okay. Says the Gemara. Mishem Ravach Besa Avil Zvuni Line. It wasn't given over for sales. Yehuda Mar Bar Meremer Mishved Rav Amar Masha Asay. If he sold it, the sale is done. Sounds like he shouldn't sell it, but if he does sold it, it's done. Papa Mishved Rav Last Fight Club. No, the sale is garnished. The sale is garnished. Amar Papa Hadi Yehuda Bar Meremer Lav Afer Shitmar. This member that you're saying for Yehuda Bar Meremer that the sale is a sale, he never actually said that. Very clear. He never said the member. He said something else. and we wanted to derive from that statement that that's what he would hold over here. What did he say? El Mecholet Bar. It was understood from, I mean, let me say it a little more clear. Yehuda Bar Reimer said Mishmei de Rava. So if Papa's saying, Yehuda Bar Reimer, he did say it, but he said it from Rava. Rava never really said it. It was something else that Rava said that he derived it from. Let's see. El Mecholet Bar. That he, it's a daily legavra tarati amasa. There was a woman that brought into a marriage to her husband two maidservants. As next time, look, the husband went and married another woman. He took another wife, totally fine. Right? The husband's not married two wives. And then what he did was unbelievable. He's able to use the benefit of these maidservants throughout the marriage. That's the malug. She keeps the ownership, the wife keeps the ownership of the maidservants, but the usage belongs to the Baal. And what did he do? He took one and gave to a second wife. That's a good way to stir up some excitement in their lives. What did he do? Ayla chada minayu. He gave one of the shvachis to the new wife. Isaac made the rabbi. The first wife came to the rabbi, said safcha. She cried out, what's going on over here? I brought it to the marriage. He took one and gave it to the other wife. Not only did he bring a tzara into the house, he's letting the tzara use what I brought in. Le'ashkba, Rava didn't listen. Now, man dechaza, suffer mashim to suffer mashasasai. So this is the equivalent of selling. The same way he could sell it, he could use it for his second wife. And so he has the rights to sell it. He owns his rights to sell it. So it's like using it for the second wife. That's what the person who saw it thought. And that's why Yehuda Mar Reimer said that Rava would hold the sale's valid. But it's not true. It's a mistake. Says Rav Papa V'loihi. It's a wrong approach. It's not what Rava was, the reason why Rava said that she loses. Mishim Revach Besa Vaka Revach Besa. The bottom line is that this is all called Revach Besa. Whether or not the shifchas are both working for this first wife, or one's working for the first wife, one's working for the second wife, it creates a revach in the bias. Overall, it's still a revach in the house, and there's a revach in the overall general, you know, the umbrella relationships have a revach because there's two shvachis working there, and therefore that still fits into the guideline. That's not a riot to our shiloh where you're selling it, you're getting money up front, but it's not going to bring revach basa down the road, and therefore maybe that sale would not be valid. Hilchasa baal shemach karka leperis, a baal sells the karka leperis leosav leiklum. If he sells the karka for the parents, let us like come taka, like Rav Papa had ruled, it's no good. My time, Abaya Mechashin, we're going to have two reasons why it's no good. Abaya says, Chashin and Shematachzif, because we're scared that the field will be allowed to depreciate. Meaning, let's not forget, ultimately, the Baal can only sell what he has. What does he have? He has the field closed by the married. Once the marriage is over, the field goes back to the wife. So he's only selling it, as we said, the buyer is taking a risk on the marriage surviving, how long the marriage is going to be. The buyer knows that there's a clock ticking on his ownership. And the buyer, therefore, may not tend to the field properly. It's like, the difference between owning a car and leasing a car. People, you often will treat the cars differently. They'll do their monthly or their 3 month inspections or whatever they got to do. Oil changes, a lot more when they're keeping the car long term, as opposed to, I'm not saying right or wrong, but that's their metzias, as opposed to when they're leasing it. Same thing over here. The guy knows there's a time limit on the field, and therefore he's gonna cause depreciation of the field, and therefore it's not a good sale. That's what Abaya says. Rav Amar Mishim Revach Besa. Rav says no. The reason we've been saying throughout the Gemara, the issue is Revach Besa. We want to have Revach Besa. We want to have an annual constant Revach Besa. Getting a lump sum up front removes the Revach Besa. My Benayo, what's the difference? The Gemara is going to mean three differences. Ik Benayo, Arad Mekarf Lamasa. One practical difference is, let's say the land is close to the city. We're not scared about deterioration, Abaya's issue, because they're watching. People are going to see that there's oversight. No one's going to leave it neglected when it's close to the city. First of all, it's also close by. It won't be neglected. And therefore, not a bias concern wouldn't be there. And therefore, the husband would be able to sell it. Whereas Rav is concerned, Rav Beis will still be there. Inami, Baal Arasu. Another nafkamina is in the case where the Baal is the Aris for the field. If the Baal is the Aris for the field, again, we're not concerned about the field being kept properly and being maintained. The deterioration, a bias concern is not a concern. But Revach Beis is a concern because Lamaisa, you're diminishing what you're able to take out of the field. Inami, Zuzi v'ka'avadei b'izka. Or the difference, or if the husband takes the money and he uses it for business. So over there, the concern of the field deteriorating is still a concern. But Rav is concerned of Revach Besa. If the husband just wanted to go on vacation and use the money and spend it, then you don't have Revach Besa in future years. But if he's taking the money to use it for business purposes, so hopefully that business will create Revach Besa, and therefore it wouldn't be a problem. Rav's issue wouldn't be an issue. Abaya's issue would be an issue. That's three nafkaminas. We did have earlier, if you remember, we spoke out earlier in the Mishnah earlier today, in the beginning of this whole sugya, we spoke out that we typically like to exchange money / payris for karka because karka is more enduring. Karka lasts longer than the wife keeps the karka and the husband keeps the payris. But here they are saying as far as the other way, if the issue is revach besa, a husband could take the money, use it for business, and people do make money by spending money, investing in business, and therefore for revach besa purposes, that would be sufficient. Let's quickly see the Mishnah. We'll stop. I know it's late. Shemeres yavam, she'enafu la nechasim. If Shemeres yavam, she's waiting to yivam and she inherits nechasim. So this is She's not married now. She was married to Reuven. Reuven died without children. She's now Zakdim to Shimon, and she inherits from her father at that moment of time. Both agree that she certainly can sell, and the sale is valid. She's not, in some ways, even though she's Zakdim, and all she needs to do is Bia to be fully married, but she's not even an Arusa now. Now she's a Zakdim. She's not even an Arusa. Her sale for sure is Gaim. Mesa, what if she dies in the status of Shemeres Yavam? My ask because of us, what do you do with the Ksuva? What do you do the Ksuva? And with the Nechasim, typically supposed to go in and out of her, in and out with her by a marriage. Bisham, they just divide it. You'd split it. Her Yarshim and the Baal's Yarshim, they divide up all the assets. Basil says, you go, each asset goes based on who's the Machzik. Basil, the Nechasim, and this is an elaboration. Therefore, Ksuva Bechesas Yerushabal. The Ksuva is Bechesas Yerushabal. The Ksuva is supposed to be a payment for the Baal to her, and therefore stays by the Baal. The Nechasim Veitzimah, those Nechasim she brought at the marriage are supposed to come back, go in and out with her, they stay by the Yerushav. In Veitzimah Bechesas Yerushav, they stay with the Yerushav. And Yechachav Mayas, what if the brother left over money, the deceased brother left over money, Yechachav Karka, the land, you should use the money to buy land. Hu Eichel Paris, now the new brother does Yibam, he'll eat the Paris. Paris that's Lushim Makarka. What if the brother left over Paris that already detached from the ground? Again, same as the prior Mishnah we had earlier. You know, any husband that gets married on this, the woman has such things come and bring full to Yerusha. Paris that are detached from the ground. Use the Paris to buy Karka, Chumam Karka, Vuechel Paris. And the husband will eat the Paris of the Karka. She owns the Karka that's bought from those Paris, and the husband eats that. The Paris. What if the Paris are attached to the ground? Now we have Machlaikas. This should sound familiar. Mamer says that you evaluate how much is it worth with the Paris, how much is it worth without the Paris, and that spread is what the Paris are worth. That spread is what the Paris are worth. The Karka itself is Karka. The spread is what the Paris are worth, and the husband has to go and buy Karka for that value. And again, in that Karka, Paris, husband will eat the Paris, and the wife will own that Karka. No, Paris will own the Karka. Chum say that Paris that attached to the ground belong to the husband. He can already eat those Paris. The Karka is Karka belongs to her, and those Paris will be his as part of the general Paris that he's able to eat. And Paris that are detached from the ground, that's called Kan Mizachim. If he comes first, he's Zaycha. If he comes first, and it's Kaina, the husband, the new husband, he's Kaina, Kadmi. If she comes first, then she's Kaina, Kadmahi, Yukam Karka, Vilach Paris. When she's Kaina, what do you do with it? Again, husband will use that money to buy more Karka, and the wife is going to eat the Paris. Kanza, once the Yavam marries the Yavama, Hari Kishna Chaldavar, so the Yavam now is considered, the wife is considered like a regular, like any other wife, but Vach takes Ksuvas about Nechz Barishan, except for the famous idea we've had many times that the Ksuva payment still, the Yavam inherits. And she brings into the marriage the assets from the first husband's marriage that are connected. The ksuva payments and the whole ksuva setup is based on the first husband. He can't say to her, your ksuva is on the table. By meaning the brother's assets are all mashubat the ksuva. What the yav wants to do is he'll say, listen, the whole ksuva is, let's make him a number, $10,000. The brother left over $200,000. So he wants to separate 10,000. This is going to get ksuva, and now I'll free up the rest of him to the rest of the assets of the brother for his Yerusha to deal with it because he already has separate security for the ksuva. So Mishnah says he can't do that. All of the brother, the first brother, Reuven's assets are Meshubat the ksuva. And in general, a regular person can't say to his wife, your ksuva money here, this is going to get ksuva, here's your security, and the rest of my assets are no longer Meshubat the ksuva. He cannot do that. All the Nechasim are Meshubat the ksuvasa to her ksuva. Last line, Girsha, if after doing Yibam, the second brother, Shimon, now goes and divorces his wife, who was a sister-in-law, now his wife, Ein la elik suva, she's the only entitled to that one ksuva. Hechzir, if he takes her back, Harei Kol Nashim, she's like any other woman, Vein la ksuva vad, and again, she, once he takes her back, she's entitled, she's Vaiter, only entitled to, once he, the assumption is he's taking her back, Aldas, that first ksuva, he's Vaiter, only entitled to the first ksuva. We'll see more about that later. Have a wonderful Shabbos. A reminder, Daf and Mitzvah Shem, again, on Matzah Shabbos at 9. And the plan right now is tentatively on Sunday. I was going to do before Slichus, but I think Slichus is pretty early. It's Sunday, and it's, I think better is after davening. I'm assuming we'll be finished davening at Darsa Dharma and everything roughly by, latest by 8. So figure 8 o'clock. 8 in the morning, Mirtz Hashem, we will have a daf on Sunday to cover the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Yeah, so to Liza's point, excellent, excellent point. So on that last case of mission, we just ran through quickly, we're talking about a case where the husband, the Yavam, divorced the Yavama and then takes her back before he got a chance to pay her a ksuva. And we're saying it's no different than any other Isha, a regular marriage, if a man divorced his wife and he didn't pay a ksuva yet, and then he takes her back, it's understood that she's not entitled to a second ksuva. She's owed the first ksuva still, and she's entitled to a new ksuva. Avadanat, the second marriage hinges on the first ksuva. So she no longer is in a position to collect the first ksuva. Rather, she now is subject to the ksuva. If the second marriage gets dissolved, if he dies or they get divorced, then he'll owe the ksuva, but only one ksuva, only one, and that same first ksuva. That's what it means in this case. She's like any other isha. And in the case where we said we divorced her, she's like any other ksuva. That means the husband, the brother now, it could take his deceased brother's estate, siphon off exactly the amount corresponding ksuva, and the rest, he kataka, go and spend and do whatever he wants with it because he's siphoned off enough. Ella connected the ksuva. While the marriage, he can't do that. But after the marriage, he could do that like any other husband could do the same. Okay. Have a wonderful Shabbos.